The moving finger. When the scratching started, Howard Mitla was sitting alone in the Queen's apartment where he lived with his wife. Howard was one of New York's lesser-known certified public accountants. Violet Mitla, one of New York's lesser-known dental assistants, had waited until the news was over before going down to the store on the corner to get a pint of ice cream. Jeopardy was on after the news, and she didn't care for that show. She said it was because Alex Trebek looked like a crooked evangelist, but Howard knew the truth. Jeopardy made her feel dumb. The scratching sound was coming from the bathroom just off the short squib of hall that led to the bedroom. Howard tightened up as soon as he heard it. It wasn't a junkie or a burglar in there, not with the heavy gauge mesh he had put over all the windows 2 years ago at his own expense. It sounded more like a mouse in the basin or the tub, maybe even a rat. He waited through the first few questions, hoping the scratching sound would go away on its own, but it didn't. When the commercial came on, he got reluctantly up from his chair and walked to the bathroom door. It was standing ajar, allowing him to hear the scratching sound even better. Almost certainly a mouse or a rat, little paws clicking against the porcelain. "Damn," Howard said, and went into the kitchen. Standing in the little space between the gas stove and the refrigerator were a few cleaning implements, a mop, a bucket filled with old rags, a broom with a dustpan snugged down over the handle. Howard took the broom in one hand, holding it well down towards the bristles, and the dustpan in the other. Thus armed, he walked reluctantly back through the small living room to the bathroom door. He cocked his head forward, listened. Scratch, scratch, scritchy scratch. A very small sound, probably not a rat. Yet that was what his mind insisted on conjuring up. Not just a rat, but a New York rat. An ugly, bushy thing with tiny black eyes and long whiskers like wire, and snaggle teeth protruding from below its V-shaped upper lip. A rat with attitude. The sound was tiny, almost delicate, but nevertheless. Behind him, Alex Trebek said, "This Russian madman was shot, stabbed, and strangled, all in the same night." "Who was Lenin?" one of the contestants responded. "Who was Rasputin, P-Brain?" Howard Mitla murmured. He transferred the dustpan to the hand holding the broom, then snaked his free hand into the bathroom and turned on the light. He stepped in and moved quickly to the tub crammed into the corner below the dirty mesh-covered window. He hated rats and mice, hated all little furry things that squeaked and scuttered and sometimes bit. But he had discovered as a boy growing up in Hell's Kitchen that if he had to dispatch one of them, it was best to do it quickly. It would do him no good to sit in his chair and ignore the sound. Vi had helped herself to a couple of beers during the news, and the bathroom would be her first stop when she returned from the market. If there was a mouse in the tub, she would raise the roof and demand that he do his manly duty and dispatch it anyway, post-haste. The tub was empty, save for the handheld shower attachment. Its hose lay on the enamel like a dead snake. The scratching had stopped either when Howard turned on the light or when he entered the room, but now it started again, behind him. He turned and took 3 steps towards the bathroom basin, raising the broom handle as he moved. The fist wrapped around the handle got to the level of his chin and then froze. He stopped moving. His jaw came unhinged. If he had looked at himself in the toothpaste-spotted mirror over the basin, he would have seen shiny strings of spittle, as gossamer as strands of spiderweb, gleaming between his tongue and the roof of his mouth. A finger had poked its way out of the drain hole in the basin. A human finger. For a moment it froze, as if aware it had been discovered. Then it began to move again, feeling its worm-like way around the pink porcelain. It reached the white rubber plug, felt its way over it, then descended to the porcelain again. The scratching noise hadn't been made by the tiny claws of a mouse after all. It was the nail on the end of that finger, tapping the porcelain as it circled and circled. Howard gave voice to a rusty, bewildered scream, dropped the broom, and ran for the bathroom door. He hit the tile wall with his shoulder instead, rebounded, and tried again. This time he got out, swept the door shut behind him, and only stood there with his back pressed against it, breathing hard. His heartbeat was hard, toneless Morse code high up in one side of his throat. He couldn't have stood there for long. When he regained control of his thoughts, Alex Trebek was still guiding that evening's three contestants through single jeopardy. But while he did, he had no sense of time passing, or where he was, or even who he was. What brought him out of it was the electronic whizzing sound that signaled a daily double square. "The category is space and aviation," Alex was saying. "You currently have $700, Mildred. How much do you wish to wager?" Mildred, who did not have game show host projection, muttered something inaudible in response. He still had the dustpan in one hand. He looked at it for a moment and then let it fall to the carpet. It hit with a dusty little thump. "I didn't see that," Howard Mitla said in a trembling little voice, and collapsed into his chair. "All right, Mildred. For $500, this Air Force test site was originally known as the Mirok Proving Ground." Howard peered at the TV. Mildred, a mousy little woman with a hearing aid as big as a clock radio screwed into one ear, was thinking deeply. "I didn't see that," he said with a little more conviction. "What is Vandenberg Air Base?" Mildred asked. "What is Edwards Air Base, Birdbrain?" Howard said. And as Alex Trebek confirmed what Howard Mitla already knew, Howard repeated, "I didn't see that at all." But Violet would be back soon, and he had left the broom in the bathroom. Alex Trebek told the contestants and the viewing audience that it was still anybody's game, and they would be back to play Double Jeopardy, where the scores could really change, in two shakes of a lamb's tail. A politician came on and began explaining why he should be reelected. Howard got reluctantly to his feet. His legs felt a little more like legs and a little less like pogo sticks with metal fatigue now, but he still didn't want to go back into the bathroom. "Look," he told himself, "this is perfectly simple. Things like this always are. You had a momentary hallucination, the sort of thing that probably happens to people all the time. The only reason you don't hear about them more often is because people don't like to talk about them. Having hallucinations is embarrassing. Talking about them makes people feel the way you're going to feel if that broom is still on the floor in there when Vi comes back and asks what you were up to." "Look," the politician on TV was saying in rich, confidential tones, "when you get right down to cases, it's perfectly simple. Do you want an honest, competent man running the Nassau County Bureau of Records, or do you want a man from upstate, a hired gun who's never even..." "It was air in the pipes, I bet," Howard said. And although the sound which had taken him into the bathroom in the first place had not sounded the slightest bit like air in the pipes, just hearing his own voice, reasonable, under control again, got him moving with a little more authority. And besides, Vi would be home soon. Any minute, really. He stood outside the door, listening. Scratch, scratch, scratch. It sounded like the world's smallest blind man tapping his cane on the porcelain in there, feeling his way around, checking out the old surroundings. "Air in the pipes," Howard said, in a strong declamatory voice, and boldly threw the bathroom door open. He bent low, grabbed the broom handle, and snatched it back out the door. He did not have to take more than two steps into the little room with its faded, lumpy linoleum and its dingy, mesh, crisscrossed view on the air shaft, and he most certainly did not look into the bathroom sink. He stood outside, listening. Scratch, scratch, scritch, scratch. He returned the broom and dustpan to the little nook in the kitchen between the stove and the refrigerator, and then returned to the living room. He stood there for a moment, looking at the bathroom door. It stood ajar, spilling a fan of yellow light into the little squib of hall. You better go turn off the light. You know how Vi raises the roof about stuff like that. You don't even have to go in. Just reach through the door and flick it off. But what if something touched his hand while he was reaching for the light switch? What if another finger touched his finger? How about that, fellows and girls? He could still hear that sound. There was something terribly relentless about it. It was maddening. Scratch, scritch, scratch. On the TV, Alex Trebek was reading the Double Jeopardy categories. Howard went over and turned up the sound a little. Then he sat down in his chair again and told himself he didn't hear anything from the bathroom. Not a single thing. Except maybe a little air in the pipes. Vi Mitla was one of those women who move with such dainty precision that they seem almost fragile. But Howard had been married to her for 21 years, and he knew there was nothing fragile about her at all. She ate, drank, worked, danced, and made love in exactly the same way, con brio. She came into the apartment like a pocket hurricane. One large arm curled a brown paper sack against the right side of her bosom. She carried it through into the kitchen without pausing. Howard heard the bag crackle, heard the refrigerator door open, and then close again. When she came back, she tossed Howard her coat. "Hang this up for me, will you?" she asked. "I gotta pee. Do I ever? Whee you!" "Whee you" was one of Vi's favorite exclamations. Her version rhymed with "pee you," the child's exclamation for something smelly. "Sure, Vi," Howard said, and rose slowly to his feet with Vi's dark blue coat in his arms. His eyes never left her as she went down the hall and through the bathroom door. "Con Ed loves it when you leave the lights on, Howie," she called back over her shoulder. "I did it on purpose," he said. "I knew that'd be your first stop." She laughed. He heard the rustle of her clothes. "You know me too well. People will say we're in love." "You ought to tell her. Warn her," Howard thought. And knew he could do nothing of the kind. What was he supposed to say? "Watch out, Vi. There's a finger coming out of the basin drain hole. Don't let the guy it belongs to poke you in the eye if you bend over to get a glass of water." Besides, it had been just a hallucination, one brought on by a little air in the pipes and his fear of rats and mice. Now that some minutes had gone by, this seemed almost plausible to him. Just the same, he only stood there with Vi's coat in his arms, waiting to see if she would scream. And after about 10 or 15 endless seconds, she did. "My God, Howard!" Howard jumped, hugging the coat more tightly to his chest. His heart, which had begun to slow down, began to do its Morse code number again. He struggled to speak, but at first his throat was locked shut. "What?" he managed finally. "What, Vi? What is it?"
"The towels. Half of them are on the floor. Sheesh. What happened?"
"I don't know," he called back. His heart was thumping harder than ever, and it was impossible to tell if the sickish, pukey feeling deep down in his belly was relief or terror. He supposed he must have knocked the towels off the shelf during his first attempt to exit the bathroom, when he had hit the wall.
"It must be spookies," she said. "Also, I don't mean to nag, but you forgot to put the ring down again."
"Oh, sorry," he said.
"Yeah, that's what you always say,"
her voice floated back.
"Sometimes I think you want me to fall in and drown. I really do."
There was a clunk as she put it down herself. Howard waited, heart thumping away, her coat still hugged against his chest. "He holds the record for the most strikeouts in a single game," Alex Trebek read.
"Who is Tom Seaver?"
Mildred snapped right back. "Roger Clemens, you nitwit," Howard said.
"Push!"
There went the flush. And the moment he was waiting for, Howard had just realized this consciously, was now at hand. The pause seemed almost endless. Then he heard the squeak of the washer in the bathroom faucet marked H. He kept meaning to replace that washer and kept forgetting. Followed by water flowing into the basin, followed by the sound of Vi briskly washing her hands. No screams. Of course not, because there was no finger. "Air in the pipes," Howard said with more assurance, and went to hang up his wife's coat. She came out, adjusting her skirt.
"I got the ice cream," she said. "Cherry vanilla, just like you wanted. But before we try it, why don't you have a beer with me, Howie? It's this new stuff, American Grain, it's called. I never heard of it, but it was on sale, so I bought a six-pack. Nothing ventured, nothing grained, am I right? Hearty har," he said, wrinkling his nose.
Vi's penchant for puns had struck him as cute when he first met her, but it had staled somewhat over the years. Still, now that he was over his fright, a beer sounded like just the thing. Then, as Vi went out into the kitchen to get him a glass of her new find, he realized he wasn't over his fright at all. He supposed that having a hallucination was better than seeing a real finger poking out of the drain of the bathroom basin, a finger that was alive and moving around. But it wasn't exactly an evening maker, either. Howard sat down in his chair again. As Alex Trebek announced the final Jeopardy category, it was the 60s, he found himself thinking of various TV shows he'd seen where it turned out that a character who was having hallucinations either had A, epilepsy, or B, a brain tumor. He found he could remember a lot of them. "You know," Vi said, coming back into the room with two glasses of beer, "I don't like the Vietnamese people who run that market. I don't think I'll ever like them. I think they're sneaky." "Have you ever caught them doing anything sneaky?" Howard asked. He himself thought the Laws were exceptional people, but tonight he didn't care much one way or the other. "No," Vi said, "not a thing, and that makes me all the more suspicious. Also, they smile all the time. My father used to say, never trust a smiling man. He also said, Howard, are you feeling all right? He said that?"
Howard asked, making a rather feeble attempt at levity. Très amusant, chérie. You look as pale as milk. Are you coming down with something? No, he thought of saying. I'm not coming down with something. That's too mild a term for it. I think I might have epilepsy or maybe a brain tumor, Vi. How's that for coming down with something? It's just work, I guess, he said. I told you about the new tax account, St. Anne's Hospital. What about it? It's a rat's nest, he said, and that immediately made him think of the bathroom again, the sink and the drain. Nuns shouldn't be allowed to do bookkeeping. Someone ought to have put it in the Bible just to make sure. You let Mr. Lathrop push you around too much, Vi told him firmly. It's going to go on unless you stand up for yourself. Do you want a heart attack? No, and I don't want epilepsy or a brain tumor either. Please, God, make it a one-time thing, okay? Just some weird mental burp that happens once and never again, okay? Please? Pretty please? With some sugar on it? You bet you don't, she said grimly. Arlene Katz was saying just the other day that when men under 50 have heart attacks, they almost never come out of the hospital again, and you're only 41. You have to stand up for yourself, Howard. Stop being such a pushover. I guess so, he said glumly. Alex Trebek came back on and gave the final Jeopardy answer. This group of hippies crossed the United States in a bus with writer Ken Kesey. The final Jeopardy music began to play. The two men contestants were writing busily. Mildred, the woman with the microwave oven in her ear, looked lost. At last she began to scratch something. She did it with a marked lack of enthusiasm. Fi took a deep swallow from her glass. Hey, she said, not bad, and only 267 a six-pack. Howard drank some himself. It was nothing special, but it was wet at least, and cool, soothing. Neither of the male contestants was even close. Mildred was also wrong, but she at least was in the ballpark. Who were the merry men, she had written. Merry pranksters, you dope, Howard said. Vi looked at him admiringly. You know all the answers, Howard, don't you? I only wish I did, Howard said, and sighed. Howard didn't care much for beer, but that night he helped himself to 3 cans of Vi's new find, nevertheless. Vi commented on it, said that if she had known he was going to like it that much, she would have stopped by the drugstore and gotten him an IV hookup. Another time-honored Vi-ism. He forced a smile. He was actually hoping the beer would send him off to sleep quickly. He was afraid that without a little help, he might be awake for quite a while, thinking about what he had imagined he'd seen in the bathroom sink. But as Vi had often informed him, the beer was full of vitamin P, and around 8:30, after she had retired to the bedroom to put on her nightgown, Howard went reluctantly into the bathroom to relieve himself. First, he walked over to the bathroom sink and forced himself to look in. Nothing. This was a relief. In the end, a hallucination was still better than an actual finger, he had discovered, despite the possibility of a brain tumor. But he still didn't like looking down the drain. The brass crosshatch inside that was supposed to catch things like clots of hair or drop bobby pins had disappeared years ago, and so there was only a dark hole rimmed by a circle of tarnished steel. It looked like a staring eye socket. Howard took the rubber plug and stuck it into the drain. That was better. He stepped away from the sink, put up the toilet ring. Vi complained bitterly if he forgot to put it down when he was through, but never seemed to feel any pressing need to put it back up when she was, and addressed the John. He was one of those men who only began to urinate immediately when the need was extreme, and who could not urinate at all in crowded public lavatories. The thought of all those men standing in line behind him just shut down his circuits, and he did now what he almost always did in the few seconds between the aiming of the instrument and the commencement of target practice. He recited prime numbers in his mind. He had reached 13 and was on the verge of flowing when there was a sudden sharp sound from behind him. Pwuck! His bladder, recognizing the sound of the rubber plug being forced sharply out of the drain even before his brain did, clamped shut immediately and rather painfully. A moment later, that sound, the sound of the nail clipping lightly against the porcelain as the questing finger twisted and turned, began again. Howard's skin went cold and seemed to shrink until it was too small to cover the flesh beneath. A single drop of urine spilled from him and plinked in the bowl before his penis actually seemed to shrink in his hand, retreating like a turtle seeking the safety of its shell. Howard walked slowly and not quite steadily over to the wash basin. He looked in. The finger was back. It was a very long finger, but seemed otherwise normal. Howard could see the nail, which was neither bitten nor abnormally long, and the first 2 knuckles. As he watched, it continued to tap and feel its way around the basin. Howard bent down and looked under the sink. The pipe which came out of the floor was no more than 3 inches in diameter. It was not big enough for an arm. Besides, it made a severe bend at the place where the sink trap was, so just what was that finger attached to? What could it be attached to? Howard straightened up again, and for one alarming moment he felt that his head might simply detach itself from his neck and float away. Small black specks flocked across his field of vision. "I'm going to faint," he thought. He grabbed his right earlobe and yanked it once, hard, the way a frightened passenger who has seen trouble up the line might yank the emergency stop cord of a railroad car. The dizziness passed, but the finger was still there. It was not a hallucination. How could it be? He could see a tiny bead of water on the nail and a tiny thread of whiteness beneath it. Soap, almost surely soap. Vi had washed her hands after using the John. It could be a hallucination, though. It still could be. Just because you see soap and water on it, does that mean you can't be imagining it? And listen, Howard, if you're not imagining it, what's it doing in there? How'd it get there in the first place? And how come Vi didn't see it? "Call her, then. Call her in," his mind instructed, and in the next microsecond countermanded its own order. "No, don't do that, because if you go on seeing it and she doesn't..." Howard shut his eyes tight, and for a moment lived in a world where there were only red flashes of light and his own crazy heartbeat. When he opened them again, the finger was still there. "What are you?" he whispered through tightly stretched lips. "What are you, and what are you doing here?" The finger stopped its blind explorations at once. It swiveled, and then pointed directly at Howard. Howard blundered a step backward, his hand rising to his mouth to stifle a scream. He wanted to tear his eyes away from the wretched, awful thing, wanted to flee the bathroom in a rush, and never mind what Vi might think or say or see. But for the moment, he was paralyzed, and unable to tear his gaze away from that pink-white digit, which now resembled nothing so much as an organic periscope. Then it curled at the second knuckle. The end of the finger dipped, touched the porcelain, and resumed its tapping, circular explorations once more. "Howie," Vi called, "did you fall in?" "Be right out," he called back in an insanely cheery voice. He flushed away the single drop of pee which had fallen into the toilet, then moved toward the door, giving the sink a wide berth. He did catch sight of himself in the bathroom mirror, however. His eyes were huge, his skin wretchedly pale. He gave each of his cheeks a brisk pinch before leaving the bathroom, which had become, in the space of one short hour, the most horrible and inexplicable place he had ever visited in his life. When Vi came out into the kitchen to see what was taking him so long, she found Howard looking into the refrigerator. "What do you want?" she asked. "A Pepsi. I think I'll go down to La's and get one. On top of 3 beers and a bowl of cherry vanilla ice cream? You'll bust, Howard!" "No, I won't," he said. But if he wasn't able to offload what his kidneys were holding, he might. "Are you sure you feel all right?" Vi was looking at him critically, but her tone was gentler now, tinged with real concern. "Because you look terrible. Really." "Well," he said reluctantly, "there's been some flu going around the office. I suppose..." "I'll go get you the damn soda if you really need it," she said. "No, you won't," Howard interposed hastily. "You're in your nightgown. Look, I'll put on my coat." "When was the last time you had a soup-to-nuts physical, Howard? It's been so long, I've forgotten." "I'll look it up tomorrow," he said vaguely, going into the little foyer where their coats were hung. "It must be in one of the insurance folders." "Well, you better... And if you insist on being crazy and going out, wear my scarf." "Okay, good idea." He pulled on his topcoat and buttoned it, facing away from her, so she wouldn't see how his hands were shaking. When he turned around, Vi was just disappearing back into the bathroom. He stood there in fascinated silence for several moments, waiting to hear if she would scream this time. And then the water began to run in the basin. This was followed by the sound of Vi brushing her teeth in her usual manner, con brio. He stood there a moment longer, and his mind suddenly offered its verdict in 4 flat, no-nonsense words. "I'm losing my grip." It might be, but that didn't change the fact that if he didn't take a whiz very soon, he was going to have an embarrassing accident. That, at least, was a problem he could solve, and Howard took a certain comfort in the fact. He opened the door, began to step out, then paused to pull Vi's scarf off the hook. When are you going to tell her about this latest fascinating development in the life of Howard Mittler? His mind inquired suddenly. Howard shut the thought out and concentrated on tucking the ends of the scarf into the lapels of his overcoat. The Mittler apartment was on the fourth floor of a 9-story building on Hawking Street. To the right and half a block down, on the corner of Hawking and Queens Boulevard, was Law's 24-hour delicatessen and convenience market. Howard turned left and walked to the end of the building. Here was a narrow alleyway which gave on the air shaft at the rear of the building. Trash bins lined both sides of the alley. Between them were littery spaces where homeless people, some but by no means all of them winos, often made their comfortless newspaper beds. No one seemed to have taken up residence in the alley this evening, for which Howard was profoundly grateful. He stepped between the first and second bins, unzipped, and urinated copiously. At first, the relief was so great that he felt almost blessed in spite of the evening's trials. But as the flow began to slacken and he began to consider his position again, anxiety began to creep back in. His position was, in a word, untenable. Here he was, pissing against the wall of a building in which he had a warm, safe apartment, looking over his shoulder all the while to see if he was being observed. The arrival of a junkie or a mugger while he was in such a defenseless position would be bad, but he wasn't sure if the arrival of someone he knew, the Fensters from 2C, for instance, or the Dattelbaums from 3F, wouldn't be even worse. What could he say? And what might that motormouth Alicia Fenster say to Vi? He finished, zipped his pants, and walked back to the mouth of the alley. After a prudent look in both directions, he proceeded down to Law's and bought a can of Pepsi-Cola from the smiling, olive-skinned Mrs. Law.
"You're a pal tonight, Mr. Mitra," she said through her constant smile. "Fearing all right?"
"Oh, yes," he thought. "I'm fearing just fine, thank you, Mrs. Law. Never better on that score." "I think I might have caught a little bug at the sink," he told her. She began to frown through her smile, and he realized what he had said. "At the office, I mean."
"Better bundle up warm," she said.
The frown line had smoothed out of her almost ethereal forehead.
"Radio say cold weather is coming."
"Thank you," he said, and left. On his way back to the apartment, he opened the Pepsi and poured it out on the sidewalk. Considering the fact that his bathroom had apparently become hostile territory, the last thing he needed tonight was any more to drink. When he let himself in again, he could hear Vi snoring softly in the bedroom. The three beers had sent her off quickly and efficiently. He put the empty soda can on the counter in the kitchen, then paused outside the bathroom door. After a moment or two, he tilted his head against the wood. Scratch, scratch. Scritch, scritch, scratch. "Dirty son of a bitch," he whispered. He went to bed without brushing his teeth for the first time since his 2-week stint at Camp High Pines when he had been 12 and his mother had forgotten to pack his toothbrush. And lay in bed beside Vi, wakeful. He could hear the sound of the finger making its ceaseless exploratory rounds in the bathroom sink, the nail clicking and tap dancing. He couldn't really hear it, not with both doors closed, and he knew this, but he imagined he heard it, and that was just as bad. "No, it isn't," he told himself. "At least you know you're imagining it. With the finger itself, you're not sure." This was but little comfort. He still wasn't able to get to sleep, and he was no closer to solving his problem. He did know he couldn't spend the rest of his life making excuses to go outside and pee in the alley next to the building. He doubted if he could manage that for even 48 hours. And what was going to happen the next time he had to take a dump, friends and neighbors? There was a question he'd never seen asked in a round of Final Jeopardy, and he didn't have a clue what the answer might be. Not the alley, though. He was sure of that much, at least. "Maybe," the voice in his head suggested cautiously, "you'll get used to the damn thing." No. The idea was insane. He had been married to Vi for 21 years, and he still found it impossible to go to the bathroom when she was in there with him. Those circuits just overloaded and shut down. She could sit there, cheerily on the john, peeing and talking to him about her day at Dr. Stone's while he shaved, but he could not do the same. He just wasn't built that way.
"If that finger doesn't go away on its own, you better be prepared to make some changes in the way you're built then," the voice told him. "Because I think you're going to have to make some modifications in the basic structure."
He turned his head and glanced at the clock on the bed table. It was 1:45 in the morning, and he realized dolefully he had to pee again. He got up carefully, stole from the bedroom, past the closed bathroom door with its ceaseless scratching, tapping sound still coming from behind it, and went into the kitchen. He moved the step stool in front of the kitchen sink, mounted it, and aimed carefully into the drain, ears cocked all the while for the sound of Vi getting out of bed. He finally managed, but not until he had reached 347 in his catalog of prime numbers. It was an all-time record. He replaced the step stool and shuffled back to bed, thinking, I can't go on like this. Not for long. I just can't. He bared his teeth at the bathroom door as he passed it. When the alarm went off at 6:30 the next morning, he stumbled out of bed, shuffled down to the bathroom, and went inside. The drain was empty. Thank God, he said in a low, trembling voice. A sublime gust of relief, relief so great it felt like some sort of sacred revelation, blew through him. Oh, thank God. The finger popped up, like a jack popping out of a jack-in-the-box, as if the sound of his voice had called it. It spun around three times fast, and then bent as stiffly as an Irish setter on point, and it was pointing straight at him. Howard retreated, his upper lip rising and falling rapidly in an unconscious snarl. Now the tip of the finger curled up and down, as if it were waving at him. Good morning, Howard. So nice to be here. Fuck you, he muttered. He turned and faced the toilet. He tried resolutely to pass water, and nothing. He felt a sudden lurid rush of rage, an urge to simply whirl and pounce on the nasty intruder in the sink, to rip it out of its cave, throw it on the floor, and stamp on it in his bare feet. Howard? Vi asked blearily. She knocked on the door. Almost done? Yes, he said, trying his best to make his voice normal. He flushed the toilet. It was clear that Vi would not have known or much cared if he sounded normal or not, and she took very little interest in how he looked. She was suffering from an unplanned hangover. Not the worst one I ever had, but still pretty bad, she mumbled as she brushed past him, hiked her nightdress, and plopped onto the jakes. She propped her forehead in one hand. No more of that stuff, please and thank you. American grain, my rosy red ass. Someone should have told those babies you put the fertilizer on the hops before you grow 'em, not after. A headache on three lousy beers, gosh. Well, you buy cheap, you get cheap, especially when it's those creepy laws doing the selling. Be a dollface and get me some aspirin, will you, Howie? Sure, he said, and approached the sink carefully. The finger was gone again. Vi, it seemed, had once more frightened it off. He got the aspirin out of the medicine cabinet and removed two. When he reached to put the bottle back, he saw the tip of the finger protrude momentarily from the drain. It came out no more than a quarter of an inch. Again, it seemed to execute that miniature wave before diving back out of sight. I'm going to get rid of you, my friend, he thought suddenly. The feeling that accompanied the thought was anger, pure, simple anger, and it delighted him. The emotion cruised into his battered, bewildered mind like one of those huge Soviet icebreakers that crush and slice their way through masses of pack ice with almost casual ease. I am going to get you. I don't know how yet, but I will. He handed Vi the aspirin and said, Just a minute, I'll get you a glass of water. Don't bother, Vi said drearily, and crunched both tablets between her teeth. Works faster this way. I bet it plays hell on your insides, though, Howard said. He found he didn't mind being in the bathroom very much at all, as long as Vi was in here with him. Don't care, she said, more drearily still. She flushed the toilet. How are you this morning? Not great, he said truthfully. You got one, too? A hangover? No, I think it's that flu bug I told you about. My throat's sore, and I think I'm running a finger. What? Fever, he said. Fever's what I meant to say. Well, you better stay home. She went to the sink, selected her toothbrush from the holder, and began to brush vigorously. Maybe you better, too, he said. He didn't want Vi to stay home, however. He wanted her right by Dr. Stone's side while Dr. Stone filled cavities and did root canals, but it would have been unfeeling not to have said something. She glanced up at him in the mirror. Already a little color was returning to her cheeks, a little sparkle to her eye. Vi also recovered Conbrio. The day I call in sick at work because I got a hangover will be the day I quit drinking altogether, she said. Besides, the doc's gonna need me. We're pulling a complete set of uppers. Dirty job, but someone's gotta do it. She spat directly into the drain, and Howard thought, fascinated, the next time it pops up, it'll have toothpaste on it. Jesus. You stay home and keep warm and drink plenty of fluids, Vi said. She had adopted her head nurse tone now, the tone which said, if you're not taking all this down, be it on your own head. Catch up on your reading, and
By the by, show that Mr. Hotshit Lathrop what he's missing when you don't come in. Make him think twice.
That's not a bad idea at all, Howard said. She kissed him on the way by and dropped him a wink.
Your shrinking Violet knows a few of the answers, too, she said.
By the time she left to catch her bus half an hour later, she was singing lustily, her hangover forgotten. The first thing Howard did following Vi's departure was to haul the step stool over to the kitchen sink and whiz into the drain again. It was easier with Vi out of the house. He had barely reached 23, the ninth prime number, before getting down to business. With that problem squared away, at least for the next few hours, he walked back into the hall and poked his head through the bathroom door. He saw the finger at once, and that was wrong. It was impossible, because he was way over here, and the basin should have cut off his view. But it didn't, and that meant...
What are you doing, you bastard? Howard croaked,
and the finger, which had been twisting back and forth as if to test the wind, turned toward him. There was toothpaste on it, just as he had known there would be. It bent in his direction. Only now it bent in three places. And that was impossible, too, quite impossible, because when you got to the third knuckle of any given finger, you were up to the back of the hand.
It's getting longer, his mind gibbered. I don't know how that can happen, but it is. If I can see it over the top of the basin from here, it must be at least 3 inches long, maybe more.
He closed the bathroom door gently and staggered back into the living room. His legs had once again turned into malfunctioning pogo sticks. His mental icebreaker was gone, flattened under a great white weight of panic and bewilderment. No iceberg this. It was a whole glacier. Howard Mitla sat down in his chair and closed his eyes. He had never felt more alone, more disoriented, or more utterly powerless in his entire life. He sat that way for quite some time, and at last his fingers began to relax on the arms of his chair. He had spent most of the previous night wide awake. Now he simply drifted off to sleep while the lengthening finger in his bathroom drain tapped and circled, circled and tapped.